Welcome back to New World Next Week. I'm James Corbett of CorbettReport.com.
And I'm James Evan Pilato of MediaMonarchy.com. The Pope is coming to America Town next week, and he's bringing about 170 of his closest friends with him. But first, the White House thinks it can make a deal with companies to break encryption. This comes from the Motherboard page on Vice. The debate over encryption has been raging in Washington for almost a year, with the two sides, the pro-encryption technologists and the tech companies, and the FBI, seemingly unwilling to find a compromise and no solution in sight. But a passage in a document recently leaked by an anonymous source reveals that the White House might have a solution in mind. The administration would promise not to push any law forcing tech companies to weaken encryption at the request of the FBI, which would then encourage the tech companies to voluntarily install backdoors in their products. Quote, some in industry have indicated that a strong statement disavowing legislation is a precondition to voluntary cooperation with the United States government, end quote, a passage in the leaked draft paper prepared, which was written the White House National Security Council staff members in July. So since the prospects of legislation are dim, this approach could help build cooperation without limiting broader policy options. So this is where it starts to get really interesting. The White House itself recognizes, however, that few, if any, in the tech industry find the threat of legislation forcing backdoors to be credible, according to the leaked document. So the document was published by the Washington Post on Wednesday, September 16th. That's today to me here in the States as we're taping this. But let's jump to the Amazon Post article that published this. It's called Obama Faces Growing Momentum to Support Widespread Encryption. Get this. Privately, law enforcement officials have acknowledged that prospects for congressional action this year are remote. Although, quote, the legislative environment is very hostile today, end quote, the intelligence community's top lawyer, Robert S. Litt, said to colleagues in an August email, which was obtained by the Post, quote, it could turn in the event of a terrorist attack or a criminal event where strong encryption can be shown to have hindered law enforcement, end quote. There is value, he said, end quote, keeping our options open for such a situation. James, did you update to iOS 9 today?
Not yet, but boy, does this make me wanna. Oh my god. And there it is in black and white once again. This is about the 180th such statement that we've seen over the last few years that, wow, wouldn't it be great if there was a big cyber terror event so that we could roll out the legislation that we want to, making encryption basically outlawed or illegal. I mean, it's so in your face at this point that this is exactly the type of event that they need to move their agenda forward. So whether that event will be brought about because they deliberately do it, because they allow it to happen, or because it spontaneously happens, either in any of those events, they do have the iPatriot Act sitting on the shelves waiting to be brought out, as told by Richard Clark to someone whose name is going to forget, slip my memory at the moment. Lawrence Lessig, that's it. And we will include that video in the show notes for people who haven't seen that. It's about the 800th time we've referenced it, but we should reference it every single time that this topic is brought up, because the virtual false flag terror event is in the cards. It is on the books. They want it to happen in order to allow this legislation to move forward and to allow basically the government to look into everything, backdoor, and as if they're not already doing it through all of the various schemes they have with the NSA, but they want it in the books, in writing, in black and white. And there it is from Robert S. Litt, the intelligence community's top lawyer. So just another data point on that graph that we've been graphing out for the last several years here.
Isn't Lessig running for president? Have I seen that?
You may have. I don't know.
We'll take care of that in the show notes and, of course, on Twitter using hashtag New World Next Week. So, James, our second story this week has been building for weeks and months, and it's almost here. But first, you got to run some terror drills. From the New York Times, the Pope's visit poses a security test for New York. For hours on this past Monday morning, scores of law enforcement officials, police commanders, and representatives from at least 48 agencies sat in a room on the second floor of the police headquarters in Lower Manhattan and imagined the worst. Two active gunmen, one at a hospital, another at a train station. a power failure. A building collapsed on Cliff Street, a few blocks west of the South Street Seaport. These unlikely series of hypothetical events were part of a large-scale tabletop exercise in preparation for the visit of Pope Francis to New York specifically, which begins on September 24th. He'll be here a few days prior to that. The visit, which is the Pope's first to New York City, coincides with the United Nations General Assembly, where heads of state from about 170 countries are expected to attend. Francis will address that gathering, but from a security standpoint, his other activities provide greater challenges, given his desire to connect directly with people on the streets. He's got a visit at an East Harlem school and a procession through Central Park that's booked, and we do have in the show notes kind of the breakdown of the schedule point by point, as far as what's publicly available. On Monday, Mayor Bill de Blasio surveyed the tabletop exercise, arriving at police headquarters shortly after 11:30 a.m. He stood on the central raised platform, and they go through this sort of security theater kind of operation. He returned in the afternoon for a news conference outside headquarters and a tour of some of the specialized equipment and personnel. And, of course, the New York Times has great photos of all this stuff, like bomb disposal robots and police dogs and heavy weapons and tactical units. So the mayor in described the preparations for the papal visit and the General Assembly as unprecedented, as opposed to the previous times they always use the word unprecedented, but added, quote, "We welcome it, we embrace it, we look forward to it." The Times notes it's not the first time a pope has addressed the General Assembly. Joey Ratz did it in 2008, and Pope John Paul spoke there in 79 and even 1995. So these tabletop exercises were prepared by the Department of Homeland Security, which includes the Secret Service. The service is the lead law enforcement agency during the visit of the Pope, who arrives in D.C. on September 22nd before going to New York and then to Philly on September 26th. Now, James, I've got a few other Pope-related and Philly-related headlines, but I want your comments on the terror exercises and buildup first.
Well, how about a virtual false flag terror event while Pope Francis is visiting? That's all the eggs in one basket, two birds with one stone. Would accomplish so many different agendas, couldn't it? Well, yes, very interesting. Always worrisome when all of these dignitaries are meeting together, because, of course, it would just take some sort of event to change the world in an instant, as these types of false flag events are designed to do. And let's keep in mind, for example, the Pope John Paul II assassination attempt back in 1981, which was masterminded by a Turkish operative friend of Turkish Gladio operative extraordinaire Abdullah Çatlı. So that all ties back into Gladio and things like that, the strategy of tension. So we know how these things work and how they can be used to forward different agendas. And that's not even to talk about whatever agenda is being forwarded ostensibly on the record in terms of diplomatically with this visit. So a lot of things to watch for with this visit. We'll keep our eye on it as these stories continue to develop. And I hope people will send in updates via the New World Next Week hashtag.
Time Warner Cable, they might just be watching TV. Time Warner Cable plans channel dedicated to Pope Francis's visit. And like I said, we've got a link to his breakdown of schedule. But here's an interesting thing. I just asked just a couple of hours ago a buddy in Philly for his thoughts and if he could kind of type them out and text them to me. And he lives pretty close in on the action. And he said, quote, "The general sentiment among non-Christians is, I can't wait till all this nonsense is over with. There are billboards on a ton of buildings that normally don't have them. Homeless people are less visible. The streets are abnormally clean and the subways don't all smell terrible. Lots of shops in Center City currently being built are sprinting to finish by the time he comes to rake in the tourist bucks. And a lot of people are simply leaving the city or going on vacation to avoid it." And he notes everybody in his office is just going to work from home rather than even attempt to try and go in on that Friday, James. So we will keep watching that, and we'll keep watching as we always do. Hashtag New World Next Week. That's the best way, because we can follow that and you can follow that. And it's a great kind of open way that we can all kind of share these stories and learn more. And another way we can learn more is by focusing on the positive. So we invented Good News Next Week, and we've been doing good news stories all through 2015. And James, there was a few really good candidates for this week's good news story, but I like this one submitted via Twitter at Old Band Society. Libraries embracing the maker movement, offering patrons use of 3D printers and more. Libraries aren't just for books or even ebooks anymore. They're for checking out cake pans in North Haven, Connecticut, snowshoes in Biddeford, Maine, telescopes and microscopes in Ann Arbor, Michigan, fishing rods in Grand Rapids, and wiffle balls in Mesa, Arizona, mobile hotspot devices in New York and Chicago. In Sacramento, where this article is written out of, where people can check out sewing machines, ukuleles, GoPro cameras, and board games, the new service is called the Library of Things. Quote, the move toward electronic content has given us an opportunity to reevaluate our physical spaces and enhance our role as a community hub, said Larry Neal, who's the president of the Public Library Association, which is a division of the American Library Association, which reps about 9,000 public libraries. The web is swell, he added, but it can feel impersonal. Libraries, arguably the original sharing economy, have long circulated art prints, music, movies, and more, but they've recently added more tools such as the Library of Things and the horribly named Stuffbrary in Mesa outside Phoenix, part of a broad cultural shift in which libraries increasingly view themselves as hands-on creative hubs, places where people can learn new crafts and experiment with tech like 3D printers. This is where it gets interesting, and this is why we're most interested in this, James. I think the economic downturn forced many public libraries, especially in urban areas, to close branches, curtail hours, and cut staff, even as demand for their services by job seekers increased. To make up the difference, libraries turned to foundations, donors, friend groups, and corporations. That's not the good part. At the same time, quote, the crunch pushed libraries to look locally to prove their value. They realized that the way you best serve your community is to look like them. For some, that means 3D printers. For others, it means fishing rods. James?
Well, that is absolutely a good news story, and it's part of the story of the sharing economy, which is a subsection of the peer-to-peer economy, which I talked about back in episode 303. And it is absolutely a good... It's just a simple idea. It's a basic idea. It's such a basic idea that you almost wonder why this isn't already everywhere and hasn't already caught on to the extent that it is starting to catch on. But it should also be noted, this isn't just something for your public library to do and, things donated by corporations or whatever. It's something that you can do on a neighborhood level. You can organize it yourself. If there doesn't exist something in your neighborhood, you can start it. And there are lots of examples of that going on online already. There are sites like neighborgoods.net, which I'm not endorsing. I've never used it myself, but I know there are lots of sites like that that already exist. If there isn't one that you like, make one yourself. Start it in your own community. That is the way that we can start expanding this idea of the peer-to-peer economy and getting around all this corporate nonsense and the dependence on buying all sorts of goods so that every single person on the street has a stepladder, which is, ridiculous because you don't need it every single day of the week, that type of thing. So it's a great idea. It's a simple idea. It's one way that we can start weaning ourselves off the system. So I'm 100% behind this type of collective idea and bringing communities together in a way that, again, it's very simple, very effective.
It's funny. You even made me kind of think, it was like, oh, I bought the stepladder in the apartment building. It hangs outside the back and other people are free to come use it and actually do. Simple, silly, even kind of things like that actually are huge. And they're part of sort of withdrawing our consent like we talk about so many times. A few other notes from people using hashtag good news next week. U.S. Navy agrees to ease off sonar that kills whales and dolphins, DuPont to face their first trial over C8 exposure. But we'll wrap up New World next week, episode 241, kind of like we started with a tech story or two, like today's huge story about the kid arrested for building an alarm clock they thought was a bomb, and now he's a folk hero and poster boy for an overreaching police state. Ahmed Mohammed is Silicon Valley's new hero. That's submitted on Twitter by our buddy Brock West. And our last good news note is also a biggie, why winning the Dancing Baby lawsuit is a huge win for fair use and the web. That's a really great story there to read, and just another way I think that we're winning. For all the other hashtag New World Next Week headlines and stories we're following, just use that, James.
Yes, the Dancing Baby story sounds silly, but is important. I hope people do read that story. And one more that I'll throw in the bag from user Convince Yourself Media on CorbettReport.com. Had a Reason.com article on the underground economy and how people are getting off of the banking grid. Extremely important phenomenon that I'll be covering in more depth in a future podcast episode. So I hope people check that out as well. All the links in the show notes, as always. And as we say, you can follow along on Twitter at hashtag New World Next Week or hashtag Good News Next Week as well. I think that's it, James. Thank you for another good episode.
Thanks, man. Take care.